Okay, check this out. This is exactly how I start the podcast off every time. And if we make a flub, we pick it up like we just dropped it, like it's nothing happening. So today I'm sitting here with an esteemed guest, Miss Sandra Scott. So just like I do with everybody else, Miss Scott, tell me a joke.
Hi, Chris. I don't have any jokes.
You have a joke. No,
I don't.
You do. So hey, you got one joke. Even if it's corny, you have one joke.
I'm telling you, I am, and you know I'm not a woman that's lost for words, but I just don't have a joke.
You don't have one joke?
One joke.
One joke.
Okay, I'll tell this one. It may be off color at this time.
Doesn't matter.
So I'm going to have to pretty much ad lib and maybe switch out some parts. Well, okay, all right then. Once the devil and St. Peter had a talk, had a conversation.
Okay.
The devil called St. Peter and said, okay, hey, how are things going up there? He said, oh, well, they're going pretty good. How about down there? He said, well, I tell you what, I have some problems. I just have a group of people that just don't want to act right down here in hell. So St. Peter said, oh, my goodness. Well, tell me what's going on. Well, I tell you what, they're bringing in water and ordering up fried chicken, and they're just doing a little bit of this. They're just doing too much. St. Peter said, well, oh, man, I feel bad for you. I really, I'm feeling your pain up here. And so Satan said, okay, just wait a minute. Comes back to the phone. Okay, St. Peter, I'm back. St. Peter, okay, what's going on now? He said, well, I tell you what, now they're doing the electric slide. Doing the electric slide amongst all the heat and everything? He said, yeah. He said, wait a minute. So there was a lot of noise, confusion, sound. Okay, so Satan gets back on the phone to St. Peter, and he hears all this noise in the background. He said, man, what's going on? He said, they have put out the fire.
And that's what it is?
That's my joke.
And that's how we start this podcast.
And you can determine who they is.
Exactly.
Okay.
We want to welcome y'all to Cuts University. This is a new episode. I got my guest, Miss Sandra Scott, who's the blues authority, in the building with us tonight. We're over here at Go Cajun Subs, and we're having a good time, and we're about to get into this conversation because we teach one, we learn something, and we all win. That's what we do. So introduce yourself to my guests that are out there around the world.
Okay, well, hello, guests from all around the world. Once again, my name is Sandra Harper Scott, and I'm not a blues authority, but thank you very much for thinking that I am. I'm more of a blues lover or a blues connoisseur. And
gotcha.
I'm on a couple of boards that actually of the community of blues listeners and lovers that actually like and love the blues, and that's the Houston Blues Society. I'm currently the president, vice president, of the Houston Blues Society, and this is my second year term with the Houston Blues Society. And the Blues Society is about appreciating blues music, supporting our blues musicians, supporting the clubs in the community that actually promote the listening of blues music, and of course the history of blues in the Texas and the Gulf Coast area. Wow. I actually teach a class on blues at the Lone Star College, actually here in the Woodlands, but this semester we are actually on virtual. But this semester my class is on blues music, love, life, and living. the story of blues music. And this is, I think, my fourth semester teaching. Okay. So I have a diverse class roster and just people from just all over different backgrounds that actually love blues music. And we just sort of explore blues music historically. And then we listen to the blues and we sort of, you know, pull apart some of the things this past actually, yesterday our class was on blues poets and blues poems. Langston Hughes, you know, he's a famous writer during the Harlem Renaissance, wrote a series of what is called the blues poems. So that's what we were talking about on yesterday. So, okay. Of course, I'm a native Houstonian and mother of two, grandmother of one. Very spoiled granddaughter, and that's a little bit about me. Oh, and I work for a nonprofit in education at this time. I'm the executive director for an educational nonprofit, so that's about me.
That's incredible. That's incredible. That's a lot. That's a little bit.
Well,
if that's a little, I wonder what the rest of the pie is like.
Right, and I sort of just served you up 3/4.
Yes,
of it,
you
but
did.
That's okay. That's okay.
Hey, like I said, teach something, learn something.
Exactly.
We all
exactly.
win.
Exactly.
Exactly. Wait. I'm admiring this shirt that you have on right now, and it's little Joe Washington.
Yes.
And
yes.
When you first came in, and I saw the shirt, and I said, "Wait a minute, I know him. I would always see him." Around Houston in different spots, but mainly in that Elgin Montrose
right.
area, because there are a number of bars
right.
that they play live music. And he would just walk. I would be in there with a couple
exactly.
of friends. He would walk in, pick up someone else's guitar
exactly.
and go play.
Exactly.
And then he would come around and say, "Yeah, give me a tip. Give
exactly.
me a tip."
That's little Joe. That's
and
who he was.
Exactly. And so when I heard that he had passed away, I said, "Wait a minute, the little guy?" And I didn't know how old he was. I just knew that he still had a passion for music. And he was always around.
Right.
So when I became familiar with the Houston Blues Society, and I just always wondered if he was a part of that network, as well as some of the other legendary blues musicians from Houston.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know that much about little Joe Washington. I sort of met him in his latter years or later years, as you would say, and I had that first experience meeting him as well. It was actually at Discovery Green, and he sort of rode up on a bicycle.
Okay.
Okay. And the last time I saw him was in a club venue in a club setting, other than at his funeral, because I was honored to attend the funeral. But I will tell you this much. He was a blues icon in the city. A man of little stature, but he was a phenomenal guitar player.
Mm.
And he's one of those unsung blues heroes. And, of course, the Blues Society or the blues community loved right. Little Joe. And I wish that the world could really have had a chance to partake of his genius when it comes to playing blues and blues music.
Wow. Tell me, how many blues, famous blues musicians have come out of Houston? Because I don't think a lot of people know that some of your favorite blues artists have come out of Houston.
Well, you're right about that. If they did not actually were born or raised or anything like that in Houston, they actually for sure spent some time here
right.
For various reasons. Either it was family or they decided to settle here, or actually if you've heard of Don Roby
yes.
and the Duke Peacock recording label, a lot of blues musicians came to the city to actually record with the Duke Peacock label. But we do have some blues artists that are here that have traveled the world. You know, one of my favorite blues musicians is Mr. Milton Hopkins. He's okay. the cousin of Lightnin' Hopkins, who actually lived and ended up actually dying here. He was actually from the Centerville Crockett area, East Texas,
right.
but he lived here in Houston. And then you had of course, Trudy Lynn, who's also world-renowned and just a good person overall. She's a blues musician. She actually still resides here in Houston. You have Miss Jewel Brown, who traveled for some time with Louis Armstrong, and she's actually lives here in the Third Ward, in the Tray, as they would say. We have Grady Gaines. He and Milton actually traveled and performed with Little Richard. So if you see any of those pictures of Little Richard, he's on the piano, and that's Grady Gaines that jumped on top of the piano to play that saxophone. So, I mean, there are so many, and I mean, I could really name a lot of them, and hopefully they'll come out. Their names will come out through the course of our conversation today.
Yeah. Well, one I wanted to bring up is Johnny Clyde Copeland.
Exactly.
Now, I'm close to that family because his son, Michael, became a great mentor to my son, Chalky White, who's also in the blues.
Right.
And his daughter, Shamika Copeland,
yes,
is renowned. She's considered to be the queen of the blues right now. I think that's the moniker she has right now, or...
Well, she's very popular in the blues community, and she's won several awards through the Blues Foundation.
Okay.
Every year there's an award ceremony, and certainly Shamika is sort of the darling of that event. Over the past few years, she's won some of the top awards.
Okay. And I'm seeing that now we're going to get into this entire genre and get a little more in depth and serious about it, because I see things that I've seen. I'm a hip hop and rap music producer, and I've seen how this genre has grown, and then what was once not considered to be music has now been taken over and co-opted by a whole entire generation of people that don't look like me. And now they're considered to be the fathers of a certain genre of music. So I'm seeing some of that with the blues. So I see a lot of artists that are at the head of what's considered this music genre, and they're not looking like us anymore. And so I'm just trying to understand that, because we create it, we make it popular. And then all of a sudden, someone else comes in, and the next thing you know, they're considered the king of the blues. They're considered the king of this or that. And that's always amazed me, and I've always wondered how that came to be.
Well, sort of like jazz and other things that have been developed or, what can I say, nurtured or invented in the African-American community, but has migrated to other communities for various reasons. And I would say, from my observation, with blues and even with jazz, a lot of times we do not value, when I say we, I'm talking about African-Americans, do not value what our true cultural contributions are to not just the United States, but to the world.
Right.
Someone else will come in, be it a different hue, a different whatever, and they enjoy it. But not only do they enjoy it, they invest in it.
Mm.
They learn it.
Yes.
And things like that. So it's sort of a two-sided coin, because I can say you can't get mad at folk
for liking
what they like and doing what they do, and you don't say, hey, wait a minute, this is ours. We're going to stay close to it. Mm-hmm. We're going to nurture it. We're going to say, this is ours.
This is ours.
So you're not going to take it over. You can join us, because I will say, especially with blues, and I've seen it with jazz, thank goodness for folks of other hues and other ethnicities for taking it on, because that's how a lot of our musicians can sustain their livelihood.
Right. Well, I noticed that Trudy Lynn, she travels abroad.
Well, a lot of our blues artists, local blues artists, if they were to depend not just on the African-American community, but even sometimes the blues community within the city of Houston to make a living, then they would be in trouble. And that's problematic, and we can definitely get into that because there are some reasons for that as well. But I would say... even in studying the blues in the earlys, I would say 40s, early 50s, around that time frame, it sort of had the interest in it with regards to recording studios. It sort of had died down. Mm. And when it first came out, race music is right. What they call it, was popular, and blacks were buying music and other folks were buying music. And even during that Harlem Renaissance period, right. I was talking about, people were really into that and learning. You had your Cab Calloways and right. your Ma Rainey.
I was just about to say
your
Ma
Bessie
Rainey.
Smiths and right. all of that. And then after a while, it became a marketing thing. Okay, we want to branch out into other forms of music that could be more profitable because you always have money. Follow the money.
Well, always have to follow the
right.
money.
Right, and so. And thank God for our blues lovers across, as they say, the lake in Europe. Then some European artists started listening to the blues. So the blues sort of got revived, actually, by another community or group of people. When I say that, I say those that went out, brought the music, got engrossed in the music. Mm. And there's this, and this was later, this was obviously in the late 60s, early 70s, even the Rolling Stones, Mick Jagger and Keith Richards met because they both had heard the blues from across, you know, the lake.
Is that when they were interested in Muddy Waters? And
well, they got their name, Rolling Stone. That's a Muddy yeah. Waters song.
Right.
So they love the blues. They love the blues, and that's how they sort of both hit it off as professional musicians because of the love of the blues. And they would say that their latest CD, I think it's called Black and Blue, they go back to their blues roots. And of course, that's how they got their name. Well, so blues influence, and we can talk about that too, has an influence on rock and roll because they listened to those people and the blues pioneers, I guess you could say. And that's how they, you know, learned to play the guitar and got those particular licks on the guitar. And then they improvised because just like anything, you're going to take it and you're going to make it your own.
Well, let's talk about that influence.
Yes.
Because I've seen, you know, I used to be a sample-based music producer. And I would scour record stores trying to find old records that looked like, just based on the cover, it looked like it had something funky on it. So I would find these blues albums that my mom would have, like Lattimore, like Bobby Blue Bland. Mm-hmm. I never really knew who they were, but then when I heard the music, I said to myself, oh man, that's catchy. That's funky. You hear that little piece right there? You hear that what he just sang? If we loop that can be catchy. Let's put it to a beat and change it up. Albert Collins.
Right, right.
What's his Albert King.
Right.
I've sampled a lot of his music without really knowing who he was until much later in life. Then I realized how great these people were.
Exactly.
So when you think of B.B. King and you think of Albert King, what's the gentleman out of Chicago? Because what I'm noticing is that blues is different everywhere you go. You got the Delta Blues in Mississippi. You got the Chicago blues.
Well, you thank that for the Great Migration. You know, there was a Great Migration that the two waves of it in the early 1920s, 30s, 40s, which was right after slavery, Emancipation Proclamation, and blacks started leaving the Mississippi Delta. Well, two reasons. The Knight Riders, the KKK, you know, and then industrialization, right? And so they were asked, a lot of them, because of the Industrial Revolution, to come to these cities, New York, Chicago. That's how you get the Harlem Renaissance, you know, because they're coming off of these agriculture and farms and going into the cities. Well, you take what you have. We talked about that.
Right.
So you take what you have, and then you sort of make it your own. So that's how we get the Chicago blues.
Okay.
We get the Memphis blues. There's New Orleans blues. There's Texas blues. There's West Coast blues. While those folks migrated from the South, they came from, because you would, if you did the, you know, history will tell you that blues was birthed out of the Mississippi Delta. But of course, it goes even farther back to Africa and the griot, the storyteller, and the call and response. We do it in our churches, in the Baptist church, the deacon.
And they do it in hip hop. Yeah.
But that is a African, what I would say, tradition.
Wait a minute.
I'm really in school today.
I'm really in school today because I never would have taken that and thought about Africa. It's so much that we don't know about our history, and they don't teach us in school.
And if
we don't have someone like yourself that's around to impute that knowledge and that information, we're lost to it. And then when we discover it, we're like, damn, what else is it? What else is there that I don't know?
Right. And it just, you know, what I tell people, there's nothing wrong with ignorance, because ignorance just mean, or ignorant, lack of knowledge.
Right.
So you want to learn some knowledge. And that's the thing. And I tell people, even especially when I'm in a culturally diverse audience, everybody wants to sing our blues, but no one wants to live our blues.
Right.
And blues is entertaining to you, but that's the story of our life.
Yeah.
In America.
That's why it's the blues.
That's why it's called the blues. And of course, there's some happy blues and some sad blues. But if you look up the word blues, you know, there is normally what it's, you know, it's on a 12 bar beat measure. Mm-hmm. And then it's the lyrics are AAB. You know, you say a line once, then you repeat it, and then there's a tag verse.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the blues. So I tell people all the time, you really like blues because that lyricism has been borrowed in all other genres of music.
It truly has.
And that's why a famous blues musician whose name I cannot think of, it'll come to me, I'm having a senior moment, but it says, blues is the roots, R-O-O-T-S, and everything else is the fruits. F-R-U-I-T-S. So that's blues is the roots. Everything else is the fruits. And
is that McKinley? No, that's not McKinley.
No, it will come to me. I'm having just a senior moment. And even people that enjoy listening to the blues, one of my students chatted in our chat box when I was talking on yesterday about how folks listen to the blues in juke joints. Well, juke is a Gullah word. And you've heard of the Gullah people. Right. And that's, you know.
You got to school
Gullah,
me on that.
Okay,
Gullah.
That's a group of African Americans that live in, I believe it's in Charleston, in that area, the Carolinas. And they sort of pretty much maintain their African roots and heritage.
Gullah.
They're called Gullah. Gullah. They're famous for making like the weave baskets. If you go to the markets, you'll see that, and they sell them for, you know, quite expensive, but they are worth it. But it's Gullah. But Gullah is, and they're a little bit closer to their African culture. But juke, when we say we're going to a juke joint, well, that's a Gullah word. So it's an African type word. And so that's which is going back to what we were saying earlier, is that when you want to discover the history of the blues, then you know. I mean, it started in Africa with the storytelling and the griot. So I'm going to tell you a story, because most blues songs, they're a story of love lost, love found, hard life.
Right.
All of them, even when we were talking about Langston Hughes, you get an opportunity, read his poem, The Weary Blues.
The Weary Blues.
That's one of Langston Hughes' most famous poems with regards to the blues poems. But anyway, these blues, after the Mississippi Delta and with the Great Migration, and like I say, there were two waves of it, but when blacks started moving out of rural America, off of the farms, they went into the cities, mm-hmm. and it just depends on where they went. If they went to New York or to Chicago or Memphis, mm-hmm. you know, and then you have, you know, the New Orleans style blues, Chicago blues. You have Texas blues,
right?
And Texas blues is deep. You know, you have Blind Lemon Jefferson. You have Lance Lipscomb. Of course, you have Lightnin' Hopkins. Then you have Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yes.
You know, and that's a different thing. And of mm-hmm. course, the blues musicians started out just on a guitar, right?
Right.
Then when you move farther on a five-string guitar, right? But when you start adding, like you can hear now, mm-hmm. other instruments to it, you know, so you hear the electric guitar, you know, which is now predominant mm-hmm. in blues. So yes, it has migrated, it has changed, and just like a lot of things, you know, it gets diluted. Some of us may say, and I've heard older musicians that say, gets polluted, right? I tell everyone up front, I'm a blues
purist.
And that to me, that is the best form of the blues. And the rest is, like I say, it's a variation of it. Mm. But like they say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So it's plenty enough blues and blues music out there for everyone. And it's truly universal. And if you go like to Memphis to the actual Blues Foundation, you'll see people from every continent, except probably Antarctica, that are coming and playing the blues and enjoying it. So it's more, to me, of a unifier than a divider. But there's a lot of things that go within that, that in dialogues, that actually have to take place. And even now, with the Black Lives Matter and the things that's going on, the racial division within the country, there's been a lot of hard conversation and a lot of difficult realizations of folks are having it, because, you know, it's like how can you love the blues and all these blues musicians, these older black men and women, and you're really racist,
right?
but you know, how
mind blowing, right? Right.
So
but that's loving what we do,
right?
But not loving us,
right? You like to sing our blues, but you don't want to live our blues.
Right.
But not only do you not want to live our blues, you really don't want to hear about it.
Right. Let's neatly wrap this up in a package of entertainment and then devour that and then go about our way.
Okay.
That's what it seems like. We're called single serve friends.
Yes.
Like, you know how you get on the plane and they give you that single packet of peanuts.
Right.
That's what it feels like, because I've worked in the music industry for over 15 years, and just that little time that I've been in it, I've seen so much, and I'm like, is this the way it's supposed to be? Or wait a minute, let me research a little bit more. Oh, this is the way that it's always been. And so they'll take you, usurp your talent, your entertainment purpose, and then discard you.
Right.
So that leads me into, so we're talking about influences right now. And I remember when my son started off playing the guitar, he started listening to a lot of rock. First it was classic rock. He got that down. Then he started listening to metal. Then he got that down. And I asked him a question. I said, do you know all of the people that you're influenced by? Let me show you who they were influenced by.
Right, right.
And then when you track back, like you said, the Rolling Stones, Keith Richardson, Mick Jagger, and you look at who they were influenced by, and you say, wait a minute, Eric Clapton, who is Muddy Waters? Well, that's a good question. Let's go find out. Let's take a trip. Let's go scour the internet. Then let's go find some place. Let's go to the library, find out everything we can about who Muddy Waters was. And then you find out, okay, it wasn't just Muddy Waters, it was Howlin' Wolf.
Right.
It was what's her name? I can't remember her name right now, but she was signed to Chess Records, and I can't You know who I'm.
Bessie Smith?
Not Bessie Smith.
Okay. Big Mama Thornton?
Oh, we're going to get into Big Mama Thornton.
Yeah. Yeah.
But just to know that none of what you're doing is originally yours, but you've used it to the point where people automatically assume that you created it.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm a hip hop kid. I'm a hip hop baby. I grew up on rap and hip hop, and I always wanted to be a participant in that part of the music, not really the music industry, but just the creation of that. I wanted to learn how can I be a rapper? How can I be a producer? How can I make the music that I'm playing? So when you start looking back and you say, man, wait a minute, the founders of hip hop are not the founders of hip hop now. So when you see that Mount Rushmore of who the greatest and right, who created
right,
it,
right,
you don't see us.
No.
You might see someone that looks like Eminem and you're like, wait right, a minute, Eminem didn't create this. This person, even when I go back and listen to Cab Calloway, I hear the way he scatted and bopped on songs. You could hear that progression in hip hop.
Right.
And when you look at the dances, you know, I saw something the other day and it was talking about Michael Jackson invented the moonwalk. And then you saw Jeffrey Daniels, who showed Michael Jackson. But then you go back and you see James Brown, who was doing it in the 50s and 60s.
Bill Bojangles Robinson.
Exactly.
The Nicholas Brothers.
Hey, listen. If you don't know who the Nicholas Brothers are, wait a minute. We have to pay a bill. Hold on.
Are you prepared for an untimely event that may put your family at risk? Is your family financially protected if you are no longer with them? If something was to happen to you, would your assets go into probate? These and many other risk factors can financially devastate a family upon the death of a loved one. Don't be one of the many Americans that don't have affordable life insurance, asset protection, or retirement options. Contact Next Right Financial Services and we'll advise a plan that's best for you and your family, securing your family's legacy. We work directly with many life insurance, annuity, and trust companies, and will broker the absolute best price and policy for you. Contact us today at nwfsfl.com or call 850-716-5497. That's 850-716-5497. Next Right Financial Services, helping secure your future. We look forward to speaking with you.
Like I said, if you don't know who the Nicholas Brothers are, you need to go find something on Facebook that's a 5-minute clip and just watch these two brothers. They always talk about Fred Astaire. They always talk about
Gene Kelly.
If you don't know who the Nicholas Brothers are,
Hoofers, real Hoofers.
Listen, these were some bad boys.
Yes.
These brothers were cold. And imagine they performed these acts 4 and 5 times a day.
Pull up YouTube Stormy Weather and the Nicholas
Is that the brothers on the staircase?
The stairs.
Oh,
yes.
My God. Listen, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you need to go and just look that up. Stormy Weather. You would be amazed. I am not joking.
And I tell my daughters all the time, well, not all the time, but when they really started getting into music and listening and rap and all of that, I say that wouldn't be rap if it wasn't 60s and 70s music. They're
exactly.
Sampling.
Yeah.
They're sampling.
That was me.
That lit. George Clinton, people. That we've heard that too. That's
yes.
Why when the gentleman came out with
Dr. Dre.
Not only Dr. Dre, the gentleman, the family ended up suing Marvin Gaye's family.
Oh,
you know,
Pharrell.
No, not
Pharrell.
Not just Pharrell. It's another one, but that got to give it up. We had danced to Marvin Gaye, and when we heard that tune,
yeah, like,
we said,
"See,
that's Marvin Gaye."
Hey, but this let me just explain this, Ms. Scott. As a producer, I knew it wasn't a sample. I knew it wasn't the same thing, but listening to it and listening to what Pharrell and the singer Robin Thicke,
what
they created was incredible because it mimicked it, but it wasn't it.
Okay.
And even all you have to do is really listen. As long as it reminds you of it, you can be sued. But what you should do in situations like that is get ahead of it. and talk to the family. Listen, we created a song,
right?
And we were inspired by your
don't
father's
deny
music.
It. That's the thing.
That was the problem.
It.
They
don't
all said
deny, cause,
we didn't get that from.
Because you were inspired by
exactly.
It.
You're in the studio. You're listening to it,
and it happens and all happens. The time.
And that's why I sometimes say, son, do not listen to other people's music when you're in a creative space, because you'll find yourself borrowing something, and just ever so slightly, it's only so many notes.
That's right.
But the way you play those notes, it will sound like you're mimicking this person.
Right, right. But that comes back from knowing the history and listening and reading and knowing that this person did this and this person did that. And that's one of the reasons why we let other folks take over what we're doing, because we don't take ownership of it.
Right.
And we don't learn about it.
Right.
And like they say, nobody can ride your back if you don't bend over and give it to them.
Yes.
And a lot of times by us not being vigilant and learning and teaching, we're allowing folks to say, okay, well, take it and make it your own. And the thing of it is, if you don't know it, you can say, okay, well, that sounds good.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't, you know, you're giving it to me. It's not correct information. But if I'm not going to go and
right.
do my due diligence and find out, then you can sell me any bill of goods, right?
Right? It's a lot of Christopher Columbuses out there. Look what I discovered.
Exactly.
You know, they were already doing that in Houston back in 72?
Exactly.
Over at Don Robey's studio. You know that, right? No, they weren't. And here you are in 2015 thinking that you created something because no one's playing it now.
Right.
You go back and you research and you find out, wait a minute. Yeah, I did borrow that. Let me be honest about it. I was heavily influenced by it. Let me give credit what credit is due.
Exactly.
And carry on.
Exactly.
Because if you have a fan base, you're going to still have a fan base. They're going to like your version of what you're doing.
Right, right.
But give the credit. But oftentimes, we might get the credit without the financial due.
Exactly. And that's what
I don't want the credit if the money doesn't come with that.
Right.
And don't sample
right,
me.
Right.
And then say, well, we gave you a shout out. We talked about you. Like the situation that happened with Lady Antebellum.
Right.
And
Lady A, the blues singer, yes.
Who's been using that name for over 30 plus years.
Right.
All of a sudden, we're not going to go by Lady Antebellum because of all the uprising in America,
tensions.
the tension right now. But
right.
We're going to go by Lady A.
Mm-hmm.
But when Lady A says you can't do that, and if you are going to co-opt my name, you're going to pay me for it, then there's a problem.
Right.
I have a problem with that.
Exactly.
I have a problem with that. And I think what's been happening in entertainment period, us as African Americans and not having access to the information, the knowledge of how the music business works, how contracts work, how ownership works, publishing, royalties. We were quick watching the movie Cadillac Records, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you pay attention, they're dropping jewels throughout the entire movie. There's one scene in the movie where Leonard Chess is mm-hmm. in the street and he's talking to Muddy Waters. And Howlin' Wolf pulls up and he said, yeah, I just signed Wolf. He's a great singer. He's a great harp player. And he said, hey, Wolf, I want to give you $100 in advance. And Wolf says, nah, keep your money. I don't borrow from the store. Just pay me what you owe me.
Exactly.
And then Muddy Waters says, after Wolf leaves, he said, he must have a great voice because he ain't going to get by on personality. Talking about, you see this truck? I own it. It don't own me. And that's when Muddy Waters had pulled up in the Cadillac and started talking to Lenny Chess. And then he said, in the same breath, in the same scene, Mud says to Lenny, hey, we get those royalties back in from Hoochie Coochie Man? And Lenny Chess says, yeah, I already gave it to you. And he said, what do you mean? How you figure? He said, the Cadillac ain't free, Mud. So we were getting bought off with cars.
Exactly.
Jewelry.
Exactly.
Some money, whatever. If I could give you a couple of $1,000, I got a pocket full of money, I got a very nice car, and I'm doing what I love to do.
Or a little bit of a bottle of whiskey.
A
little bit of blow. And a fast woman.
Exactly. Keep you occupied so that you don't focus on the business.
That's the deal. And that's how a lot of deals were done. That talent was so, a lot of times, abundant. Abundant. So I wrote this song. I can write another song.
Exactly.
So it's only worth $50 to me, but you're going to take it and sell it over and over and over and over, and now you have the royalty.
Exactly.
So we don't know the expertise. We don't have that expertise. We're not learned in that area, and that's why even a class that I taught a couple of years ago called ABCs about blues culture to kids, this is what I taught. You know, you don't have to be in the mic. You can be behind the mic.
Yes.
You can be a music
attorney. Right.
You can be a sound technician.
Engineer.
Engineer.
Producer,
there are
arranger.
So many things.
Right.
So until we, and that's in anything.
Yes.
Until we own it, until we're at the table, until we are the decision makers.
Yes.
Do not expect to get our just reward. So we have to raise up. That's why I
like what this generation is doing now.
Right, yes, because they've learned from the Dr.
Yes.
Dre's. They've learned even from the Missy Elliott's.
Yes.
You know, the,
ownership
those
is
folks
key.
Say, look, I'm going to own my stuff.
I own my masters.
This is my stuff.
Yes.
Even Prince. Prince say, look, you can have my name. I'll be the artist formerly known
exactly.
as. You know, and even at some point, even I think Michael Jackson got to that. So it's, sometimes it takes the tripping up and messing up, but someone has to be courageous enough, or if you might say, step out on faith enough in yourself and say, I am going to do this.
Yes.
I am going to own that. And like you say, I applaud the generations there because they have learned, but there were pioneers like the...
Right.
Those people we were just talking about.
Right.
So they see them doing it. Mm-hmm. The generation before did not see that.
Right.
They were so happy
just to get paid.
To get the opportunity. And guess what? They just didn't have it in their mind. Not that they were naive or ignorant, but they were.
Some were pretty savvy.
Some were savvy, but they wanted to keep the bread coming.
Exactly.
And so, and the naivety to say, well, you like me, you like music, you're going to take care of me.
That's the craziest thing in the world. They're in a business and you're treating it like a family, but they treat you like business at the end of the day.
I know some artists have gotten some raw deals.
A lot. Listen, you know, movies have a way of disseminating important information at the right times. You just have to be in the moment and paying attention. You remember the movie with... Ray.
Yes.
And Ray went and got a deal with
the two friends. Right.
But they were going to pay him a nickel a record.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about it now, you say, a nickel a record? Do you know there are kids there are artists that are putting music out right now that are getting an eighth of 1 cent? An eighth of a cent. Right now in 2020, there are artists thinking that that's a good deal because they don't have to put the work in. And I say, wait a minute. Do you know? Listen, I have a son. He put out a project and it's called Beginner's Luck. And on this project, he played everything. He did his job. We happen to have the luxury of having a recording studio built in our house.
Mm-hmm.
So we can record at will. He happens to have the luxury of a father who's a producer, an engineer, and I can mix and master. We can record, mix, and master. Not only that, but I also understand marketing and graphic design. So everything that you would need a record label to supposedly do for you, son, you have this in-house. Do not take it for granted, because to you, I'm just dad. But to someone else, you can't even put a price on me. So I just gave you one of Chalky's projects, right?
Right.
I turned that project in to a friend of mine that works for Universal. He looked at that project for about 15 minutes, just in awe. Who did this? Who are you guys signed with? What are you doing? And I said, we're self-contained. We have our own label, independent label, and we're going the independent route, and we're keeping control. The only way we would put ourselves in a position to sign with anyone is after we've exhausted all of our resources and doing it on our own. I said, we're not looking to get rich off of this. What we're doing, this is a business card. But in the process of disseminating this business card, it's generated a revenue stream for Chalky.
Right.
This kid can literally go buy his own home right now with the proceeds he's generated from his project. And he owns 100% of it.
That's wonderful.
Less than 10% that I take.
Well, obviously. Well, just like YouTube artists. They start out on YouTube at home in their living room. They build up their listener or their viewership.
Then
someone comes and say, hey, look, I want to advertise.
Yes.
On your, because I know you have so many followers.
You have 500,000 followers.
Exactly. So yeah, you have to do that. And I was just going to say, going back to how the artists have been treated, more so in the past, but you still have to look at that, some of that being done today, maybe even on a smaller scale, because it just can't get away with. But it's that same sharecropper mentality.
Yes.
That
sharecropper mentality.
And it's the sharecropper, what I would
say.
You never own it. But I'm going to give you the Cadillac. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you the fast women. I'm going to give you a little blow.
And nine times out of ten, the Cadillac is still in the company's name.
Exactly. But and then you want your money. You know, and folks, you know, this has happened. And it has happened over and over and over again. And somebody's going to learn. Just like there was the, New Edition.
Oh, that has to be one of the most traumatic stories.
It's just sad.
Ever.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You go on tour. You have a number one record for 15, 16 weeks. You go on tour. You generate millions of dollars. You come back home to a check for $1.87. And they justified it? That right there is, look, somebody's getting hurt over this. They pick you up from the projects, you make all this money, and they bring you back to the projects. It costs more to print the check than the check was worth. Now, we're watching these episodes as movies and television shows. That's edited. What if you got the real uncut story of what really happened?
Exactly.
I think you would say, you got to be joking.
So we have to learn from that
and
tell others. And until, like I say, we're at the decision making level or doing it like you guys are doing it with Chalky.
We're working
You're doing it yourself.
Yes.
Because there's a project that I'm beginning to work on and we want to get it to the point where it'll be launched. Nobody will. They're going to come to you.
Exactly.
Let them come.
Let them come.
Because then you can leverage. Negotiate.
Well, you have the leverage.
Negotiate. That's the art of, you know how some folks, the art of the deal, you know. No, say no name. We're not going to go there. But but the thing of it is, it's knowledge. And
yes.
You have to know that what you have is good.
You have to know what you have has value.
Has exactly.
Ooh, hold on. Let's pay a bill right quick.
Pay the bill.
And we're back. We paying bills everywhere today. But you're right. Once you know your value, you know your worth, you're not going to settle for anything.
Exactly.
You're only going to negotiate what you want. Because one thing I've learned dealing with these record labels, they're going to only give you what they think you may feel you're worth. So if I go in there and I say, I want $10 million up front, I want control to where I have final say over my end product. And once this is done and you've recouped your $10 million advance and made a little bit on top of that, I own my masters. That was the biggest thing that I took from the movie Ray. He went in and negotiated and said, well, I started off at a nickel a record. Hey, listen, he understood the hustle. Once he figured it out, he understood everything. He said, well, they willing to give me 75 cents a record. Are you willing to give me 75 cents a record? And he said, well, that no one has a contract like that. Not even Sinatra. I'm not Sinatra. I'm not this. I'm not that. What I am is me. And I'm asking you, are you willing to give me 75 cents a record? And when they capitulated and agreed to it, he went back to the other company and said, well, they're willing to give me a dollar a record. And he said, we can match that. And he said, and I also want to own my masters. And that's when the fight began, because you don't realize that the music that you're, what you, the content that you're creating lasts forever. You have, it's
residual.
Yes, it's residual across the board. You have people that have died and gone, not coming back. And the labels own their masters, their publishing, the royalties. My
is
wife,
that BMA?
BMI,
ASCAP, yes. Yeah, CSAC. Well, some folks, they're every time they play the song, but they you
get paid. You're supposed to get a
Me some money every time.
Exactly.
You get,
there's a mechanical royalty.
BMI.
There's a synchronization rights. Yes. There's licensing. I do licensing deals right now all of the time. A lot of the reality shows that are on television, I produce music songs for those shows and movies.
Right.
And I really didn't know how valuable that was, because you're stuck in the mind frame of thinking I have to have my song on the radio.
Right.
Well, when I got a publishing statement back from BMI, I found out that I'm in 89 countries. How am I in 89 countries that I've never been to? I've never heard of some of them. And I'm saying, wait a minute. So I have a following in Oslo, Norway. I've never been to Norway. Wait a minute. So in Amsterdam, I have this big of... I looked at Chalky's charts. He has a great following in America. He has a bigger following in Italy and Japan.
Okay, that's a tour.
Particularly in Osaka. I said, wait a minute.
Why?
You're in Osaka and Tokyo? And I heard him on the phone the other day. I heard him, you know, because these kids have technology that far that reaches farther than we could ever imagine.
Right.
Well, Ms. Scott, he's on the phone. He's on a conference call with a friend of his, and he's playing this weird type of Eastern music, but he's playing something that his friend in Japan that he met is saying, okay, Chris, play it like this. And he played it, and I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm talking to my friend in Japan.
Okay, so, now how old is he again?
He just turned 16.
How old?
16.
Okay, I'm just dropping that for somebody.
Right, 16, and he's,
imagine at 16, give him 10 years.
Exactly. And I said, wait a minute. So the friend says, man, I can't wait till I come to the States to jam out with you. He said, well, no, man, I'm planning on coming to Japan, so we're going to see each other. And I said, wait a minute. And I started thinking, you know what he told me, Ms. Scott? Chalky told me, he said, I like listening to my first project, but I don't want to listen to it anymore. And I said, why? And he said, I said, because it's new to a million people that haven't heard it. He said, no, but I listened to it, and now I'm so much better.
He's evolved.
Exactly. And I said, wait a minute, this is a masterpiece. This little dude has 6 votes from Grammy board members for his project. As an instrumental.
Wonderful.
He has 6. He's not going to, I don't think he's going to win, but he has 6 votes.
That's exposure.
Exactly. He's nominated. And I said, wait a minute. So what would 16-year-old Chalky say to 15-year-old Chalky? He said, oh man, I would go back and I would chop my head off. You know, they have these duels with guitars chopping heads. He said, I would go back and I would chop my head off. And that let me know everything I needed to know, because I'm seeing a progression in my son, but he's also an artist, and he's understanding how much he's evolving and where he started and where he's going.
And he's blessed and wonderfully, because he has a mentor and a teacher in you.
I'll take that. Thank you.
You know, so and that's a lot of and that's something that a lot of our kids are missing, and that's why teaching just the fundamentals of blues or of music, and you just start where they are, where their interests are, and you just build upon that. It's sort of each one, reach one, you know, teach one, reach one, that is.
Cause university.
You know, so and so now he can learn and he can teach someone.
I've seen him teaching, you know, his friends.
And that's how, that's, to me, that's how it's supposed to be.
Right.
And that's what we are... what I can say the keepers of, and that's what we have to do to each generation. We have to give them their boost so that they can start and build their own worth, whether it's not only financial, but there's a vast wealth that's out there in knowledge and in experience and those things. And I think that is just so important. I applaud you for that.
Thank
and
you.
I applaud him for that, because you got to, you have to have something to work with.
Yes, you do. And
it, so you can't take all the credit.
Hey, I got to give you that. You're right. You're right. I'll accept that and I'll give you one back. But no, you are so right. And there's a song on his project, and I keep coming back to his project. It's called Beginner's Luck. It's a blues-ish mixtape. And he has a song on there called The Blues Made Me Do It. Mm. And honestly, that was the first song that we recorded. And when you hear it, if you haven't heard it, like I said, it's called The Blues Made Me Do It.
Okay.
When you hear it, you're not going to listen to a 15-year-old kid. You're going to listen to the blues.
Right.
And I said, you know what's missing? If you sang, it would be a rap. He said, no, I'm not singing. I'm going to let my hands do the talking.
Well, you know, a blues singer, and I tell someone, so someone may get a little bit upset with me. One thing about blues, which is different to me than jazz and classical or any kind of music like that, you can sing a good blues song and not happen to have a beautiful voice.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You just have to know how to tell the story.
Exactly. Johnny Clyde.
Right. That, and someone believes your story.
Yes.
Right? So that's why you have to tell them, just go ahead and just pick it up and sing it. But I understand where he's coming from. Now, we have some beautiful singers in blues, and I won't say any name to bear any blame on anyone, so I'm not going to take that the vocality from them. But you have to know where your gifting is.
Yes.
But one of the things that I love about blues is that you can tell a story either in the song or playing the guitar, because there are some blues singers, they don't have to say a word. When they start doing their solo, which is very popular in blues music, just doing the solo on the instrument, it tells the story, as we would say in church. You sort of making it talk.
That's what we call it at home. Okay. Make it talk, Chalky. Make it talk.
And
you know, it's funny to me, because I've always had out-of-body experiences when we're in the studio. I know this is my son, and I know we're creating something incredible, but when you can look outside of yourself and you don't recognize the person in front of you, because what they're doing is so incredible, you leave yourself and you just watch in awe.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine, this has happened. It's 14 songs on his project. Mm-hmm. We recorded 35. So I had to go through 35, condense that down to 20, and then condense that down to 14. And so I'm saying to myself, man, this is way harder than I thought. But it was so good. I wanted to give the people everything, but you can't.
Right, like they say, Stevie Wonder and Prince and even Michael, they have songs that have never been released. But when you have an artist and you just, and there's a blues song, you have to let it flow.
Yes.
You know, so it's flowing. When it's flowing, you may just have a multitude of things, and it's just not time to release it.
Hey, listen. I wanted Chalky to go on tour with Trudy Lynn so bad. I said, do you understand the experience of going to an area where you have a bass and you're touring with someone that's legendary?
Yes.
Like that? Do you know what will happen? You might not ever want to come back. You might not ever want to come back. So I said, and then the pandemic hit.
Wow.
And it shut down business.
We're going to claim
forever.
It.
Yeah, exactly. So I said, you want to get it to the point where you're working with these incredible people, and then you're strong enough and you're capable enough to stand on your own.
Right, right.
Even if that starts with opening up. When you open it up and you set the tone,
get now, introduced. There's some wonderful and devoted blues audiences across the globe.
Yes.
I can tell you that for sure.
When we had the event with the Houston Blues Society, there were a group of gentlemen from, I think they were from Spain.
Spain.
The Traveling Brothers. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Wow.
Listen. Even Steve Crace.
Shout out to Steve.
Shout out to Steve. Hey, listen, man. You bad on that heart, man.
Oh, he's a monster.
Hey, you're one. You're a unique individual.
And he's a cool guy to boot.
Very cool.
Yes, yes.
And I said, what? This is incredible. I've never seen this before. And I have to admit that I wasn't as entrenched into the blues as I am now.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I am, I'm looking for everybody. I'm looking for people that I didn't even know existed.
It'll capture you.
It will.
Because it's so much. It's a culture. It's so much to it.
And, you know, the crazy thing, like you said before, we need to embrace our ownness. We need to own it.
We need to own it. It's ours.
It's ours.
We'll share it, but it is ours.
Yeah. A lot of people are guests, but they've taken over, and they've become the new owners of the house because of the proximity that they have. They have the power. They have the access,
right.
The network.
They have the choices, the right. Festivals. There was some discussion on Facebook about
that.
We have to learn to do those things. Because
yes.
As long as you have your hand out and asking someone
yes.
for something, then that person has the decision-making process
yes.
or the decision-making ability. And you take it out of your hands.
Yes.
And I have gone, frankly, to those things and to festivals. And I'll just have to say, just being transparent, where are the black people?
Yes.
In the audience and at the gate.
Hmm.
So and like I say, you no one can ride your back unless you bend over and give it to them. So there is some responsibility
yes.
to be taken. It's plenty enough responsibility to go around for everyone, and we have to learn to do it. Teach our next generation, but guess what? We can do it now.
Yes,
we don't have to wait.
You're right.
You know, we're not the by and by. It's gonna be okay by and by. No, we want to do it now, because now is the time to sort of, what is it, carpe diem. We have to seize this opportunity
yes.
to say, no, that worked then, but this is now. So we have to be able to be in those positions to do that. And then we have to recognize that there are different pockets of blues audiences.
Yes.
And that's one of my, I guess you could say, my goals, even with the society,
okay.
is to let you know it's not just you group of people, this group of people that's listening to the blues. It's not. And I heard someone say, well, no, they don't like it. They talking about, they don't like the blues. No, that is not true.
It's not true.
You go to a family reunion or go to your
yes.
papa's birthday party or
if you're
Uncle
doing it
Sam,
on the farm. Yeah.
Uncle Sam's house. This blues is going to be played.
Yes.
Right. Because it is. That's just part of our culture. What we have to do is to learn how to get the audiences together
right.
and recognize the audience. And, of course, you know, there's a big blues festival that they had at NRG. So you have your Millie Jacksons and the urban music, they call it now,
right.
with the Tuckers and all of that. And what I can't think of the guy, the other person's name. But so there are other blues musicians.
Yes.
So just like, you know, you like a certain type of jazz, you
right.
like a certain type of this. So we recognize that. But there can be a merging, but
yes.
to say that it does not exist.
I got a question.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Right after we pay this bill.
Okay.
My question is, when is there going to be another Houston Blues Festival?
Okay.
Did I get your attention?
Oh, well, you know, I'm going to say right now that I'm not at liberty to say, and that's all I'm going to say. We'll have to talk
okay.
Off mic about that.
Okay.
But I guarantee you, we have so many great
yes.
musicians in Houston, and we have so many, well, not as many as we used to have, but there are some blues legends that are here in the city that I just really want to have that type of a venue to honor them.
Yes.
And properly, and I just don't think it's been done.
Okay.
But, you know, I would just say, just stay tuned.
Okay, I need to throw my hat in there because I want to be an active participant in anything that comes down the pike.
Well, there's one thing, and I know you do. We've had this conversation, right?
I need them to know.
There's plenty. Well, see, them, that's the problem. We're going to be the them.
There we go.
How about that? It's not them. You know how some folks say they?
Yes.
They. Who is they? That's always my retort when someone say, well, they said. Well, who is they?
Right.
Let's identify they.
Okay.
But when you know who the they is us. Bad, you know, is Ebonics, but they, right? So we.
I get.
Okay, don't make me get on my soapbox.
I want you on the soapbox. This Cuts University. Get up there and teach them. Teach them.
All I can say is stay tuned.
We're going to stay tuned then. That's incredible. But yeah, we're looking for some big things to come. I mean, 2020 has been an incredible, unbelievable year, just to say the least. And we have an election coming up. And I talked to our good friend Chris Bell about this. And I asked him two questions. I said, what is the value of our vote? What is it worth? And then the second question was, what are we getting out of it as African Americans? What are we going to get out of it? And that led to the first question, what is the value of our vote? So I know that you're a staunch believer in voting, and we have two choices. We only have two choices every 4 years. And what blows my mind, sometimes someone like a Bernie Sanders, he might be, have him listed as a libertarian, or I don't know how they classify him. But I think we need a third party, not just a Democrat or Republican Party. I think we need a third legitimate party, and not kind of sorta with the liberals, not kind of sorta. I need it to be definite so that we have options, because what's happening right now and the way it's affecting every community is truly unbelievable, but it's happening.
You want me to answer?
Yes, I do.
Because see,
I want the uncut. Well, I want the uncut.
Well, and to quote a line from a movie, Jack Nicholson, are you ready for the truth? You're not ready for the truth. Sandra's truth. And I can get on a soapbox.
I'm all ears. But, we're listening.
But to go back to the value of the vote is very important, especially now. As people will say, this is the most important election in the last 100 years and took. In the next 100 years, because our vote is going to determine not just who sits at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. It's going to determine, just like now they're in Washington, mm-hmm. rushing through a vote on the Supreme Court.
Right.
So the local judges.
Yes.
Okay.
I voted early.
Okay.
You voted early as well. Okay.
Right. So there are so many other things.
Yes. Locality.
Local. You have to get involved in local, because you live locally, right? You don't live in Washington, D.C.
Your mud tax. Your mud. Everything.
Your county judges, your district attorneys, and everything. The people that you send to Washington, the people that you send to Austin. So you have to be actively involved. And I tell anyone, if you're not going to participate in this democracy, then just shut up.
Right.
You don't get to say anything.
Right.
But because even if you like,
you ain't got no skin in the game.
I live in Montgomery County.
Yeah.
Okay. So I already know just from going to the polls what the Electoral College is going to be. Mm-hmm. I already know when I look on the slate. But guess what? I'm going to be part of the popular vote. I can't just sit back and say, well, I once again, don't give them your back.
Right.
To ride on. So it's very important, even more so. And I'm not going to say I'll just come out the closet and say I'm really apolitical, because a lot of things, it used to depend on what my moral and religious values are, because I am pro-life.
Right.
Okay. And I don't, like I said, I don't want to make anybody mad, but, you know, now is the time to be truthful because I have to look my own self in the mirror, right. You know, and I believe that the marriage is sacred between a man and a woman. God has already given us context clues. Use that in school. There are context clues. This goes with that.
Right.
But as a person that lives in a democracy, I know that everyone, no matter what race, creed, color, sexual orientation, or religious belief, has the same rights as I do. So that is where I will draw the line. Everyone has the same right as I do. I don't supersede anybody else's right.
Right.
Do we need a third party? We just need to get the two parties that are there to get it right. I don't care if we have 12 parties, right? But we just need to get it right. And then the thing of it is, once again, the same thing we were talking about even with the blues industry or the music industry, if you give somebody the key to your house,
right,
and you don't check to see what they're bringing in and who they're letting in, and they don't have any accountability, well, whose fault is it?
Right.
You for giving them the key or them for asking the key and taking it in and doing something. You understand what I'm saying?
You can't give people your power.
Right. So you have to be the responsible electorate because a lot of, and today, people, once again, I'll use that word again, ignorance, lack of knowledge. The American electorate is really not a well-informed electorate.
You're
because
right.
You wait for MSNBC, CNN, Fox, ABC, NBC, ABC to tell you instead of doing your own due diligence
right.
to find out.
Right.
So, and then they don't want, when I say here we go using that word they, whoever they is, they do not want an informed electorate.
They'll
feed you keywords. Mm-hmm. Subliminal.
Trigger words.
Subliminal.
Right.
That's marketing 101.
Right.
I keep saying a thing. Then
you're
going to
believe. Same thing over and over.
So as my brother Malcolm would say, then you can be hoodwinked, bamboozled, and run amok.
Right.
And that's what the American electorate has been. As an African American, the gains that we have made, a lot of them we're losing them because we have gotten what? Comfortable. With allowing someone else to run our house.
Right.
A lot of things we should have stopped or come to the table and say, you want our vote? You want my record? You want my song?
This is what I want.
This is what I want.
You're right.
You want my dollar?
It's funny how you can intertwine politics and business, and they all seem to go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's quid pro quo with everything.
I'm going to do this.
You're going to do this for me.
Right.
I'm expectant of that. I'm not just going to give it to you. A lot of times back in the day, we've given things away just to say I'm a part of. But when you see that's not being reciprocated and you're being shown that you're not a part of what you assumed you were a part of, that's when it becomes a problem. So just like now, like I said, the first question was, what's the value of our vote? Why is it important? And then you have to ask yourself, okay, if my vote is valuable, why are they trying to block me from voting?
Because
why
they
are they
know
setting
it's
up
valuable.
These roadblocks for things to happen just coincidentally for me not to be able to exercise my right?
Voter repression.
Suppression.
It's real.
Yeah, right.
Voter. Yeah, yeah. Suppression, repression. In other words, they want you to either not be able to vote or get so upset with the establishment you're doing exactly what you're doing. I was talking to a young lady, well, a couple of us, and I, you know, we tried not to chew her head off because we asked her if she was voting. She said, well, no, why do I have to choose? Okay, is that a rhetorical question? Because really and truly, we proceeded to tell her, this is why your choice. That's why you have to choose. Mm. If it's not as plain as the nose on your face,
right,
then can we tell you why it's important? So after the conversation, then she said, oh, wow, well, now you make me want to go and register to vote. Oh, wait a minute.
You haven't
registered to vote?
Wow. We shouldn't even be having this conversation with you.
Today is Monday.
Yes.
I mean, today is Tuesday. The last day to register to vote was Monday. Mm. Let's have this conversation again in 4 years.
4 years.
Because right now, it's a mute point.
It's null and void.
It's
right.
Null and void. Mm-hmm. Void. So that's the thing. And unfortunately, a lot of our young folk are not voting. They're not registered to vote. And a lot of folks use the excuse, well, it's just... because it's just too much going on. No, you don't want to fill out the form, put a stamp on it, and put it in the mail.
It's not that hard.
It's not that hard. But you have to value your voice. Right. You value your voice,
yes.
Don't
yes.
you?
Absolutely.
And
do.
Once you learn to value your voice, that's in any venue, whether it's in politics or in the government, in your son's life, in your daughter's life,
right.
You know, in your home, in your community. First of all, you have to value you. So that's the value
of
the vote. My vote, because they know the value of the vote, just like even in advertising. They know the value of you purchasing. They
mm-hmm.
know your value, your purchasing power.
That's
turn
why
on
they
different
inundate
stations.
You with
turn
marketing.
On different stations.
Right.
Turn on the station, turn on BET, and then turn on the OWN channel, and then turn on the... MTV and VH1, and then turn on a Hispanic station, and then find an Asian station, and then you see, look at the commercials, mm-hmm. and see how those commercials are geared to that demographic,
mm-hmm.
to that audience. Why do they do that? Because they
value
value those dollars.
Right.
So they're going to do whatever it takes to bring in those dollars. That's just marketing 101.
That revenue stream is from advertising is incredible. So you're absolutely right. And, you know, I've talked to a number of younger folk. I'm not saying I'm old, but I'm old school. I'm getting closer to old school. So somebody called me school the other day. I was ready to fight. I'm not school yet. They were trying to call me old school. And I'm like,
what?
I'm not old school yet. I'm getting there.
Yeah, when
I
turned 50, people, I used to get mad when people said ma'am. Now it's like, you didn't call me ma'am. I'm insulted.
Oh, man, that is funny. This has been an incredible, enlightening podcast, to say the least. I mean, you've been absolutely phenomenal. And we, Cuts University... is the only place on the planet that you can get a free degree in common sense. Teach something, learn something, we all win. That's the phrase. That's the catchphrase. And I've learned so much today.
And vice versa.
Hey, listen. No, I have to invite you back. So this is the first of many. Can I say that?
Sure.
Are you inclined to come back and talk with me again?
Yeah, look, can we talk?
Yes, we can. Yes, we can. And I look forward to it. I really want to be able to get an opportunity to sit down and talk with you before the election, before November 3rd. And I want to get your thoughts on what's about to happen. And I want to see after the 3rd, 4th, and the 5th what actually happens. So
right, it's going to get real interesting.
It is. And so I've learned about the blues. I've learned about history of my people. I've learned more about Ms. Scott, and I'm just blown away. And I want to leave it to you to close us out, because we're going to wrap this one up, because y'all can't get all of this. Y'all got to tune in next time, because she's got more and she's coming back.
Your voice is valuable. Your vote is valuable. Enjoy the blues. Life is a journey. Enjoy.
Indeed. Thank y'all for tuning in to Cuts University. I'm your man, DJ Cuts. Cuts University is the only place on the planet where you can get a free degree in common sense. Teach something, learn something, we all win. You guys tune in next time. I want to thank Ms. Scott, the wonderful Ms. Scott, for coming in and chatting with us. And at that note, we're out. We talk to y'all later. Peace.